Welcome to the Storycraft Cafe. Come in, grab a cup of your favorite beverage, and get ready to join the storytelling conversation. Storycraft Cafe is brought to you by Dabble, the ultimate cloud-based fiction writing software. Here we're going to bring together storytellers from all walks to encourage and empower you to craft your best story. We are live here in the Storycraft Cafe. I am your host, Hank Garner. Today, I am so excited to welcome Iris Yamashita to the show with me. She has an amazing new book. I'm just going to grab it off the shelf here. It's called Village in the Dark, and what an amazing novel this is. Iris, I actually lost sleep a couple of nights because of this book, so I don't know if I should blame you or thank you, but the credit goes to you, whichever.
Thank you so much, Hank.
Absolutely. Here. Well, thank you. I'm so happy to get to spend some time with you today. Iris, this is your second novel. Is that right?
That's correct. This is, I call it the sequel to the first book called City Under One Roof.
Gotcha. And even though this is your second novel, you have been a professional storyteller or involved in storytelling for quite a while. And we'll get into all that history in just a minute. But before we do, I love to start the show with a fun question, just to kind of set the tone for the show. And one question that I love asking people is there a piece of advice that you have been given somewhere through your writing career? And maybe it was a gem of advice that you have held, dear to you, and that has served you well. Or maybe it's a horrible piece of advice that you can laugh about now and say, "Oh, thank goodness I didn't take that to heart." Or maybe you did, or maybe you have one of each. But is there a piece of writing advice that has affected you for good or ill?
One that I often still use that early on when I was learning screenwriting, one of my instructors had told a class that a good test of character is if you can take a line of their dialogue and just say that line of dialogue and you know exactly which character is speaking. And I always think about that when I'm crafting my characters, and both in screenwriting and in novels. So I think that was a really good piece of advice.
That is a fantastic piece of advice. And someone told me that somewhere, and not in those words, obviously, but told me to make sure my characters had their own unique voice. And that's something that I refer back to as well. If I pulled this out of the book, can I tell who said this without, any of the dialogue tags? And yet that is an amazing piece of advice for sure. You mentioned screenwriting or fiction writer, novel writing. You have also worked as a screenwriter. How did you get started in that?
Well, I always did want to write a book, and I was taking classes at UCLA Extension, and my problem was that I could never finish a book, never get to the end. And living in Los Angeles, everybody I know is writing a screenplay.
Of course.
And I thought, well, let me try that. So I switched and I took some classes in screenwriting. And I found that I could actually finish the screenplays because they're only about 100 pages long and right. There's a lot of white space. So I decided to kind of stick to that for a while. And I started entering screenwriting contests, and I won one of them. And one of the judges was an agent at a huge agency, CAA. And that's how I got my foot in the door in screenwriting.
Nice. Well, you said a couple of things there that I want to delve into a little deeper. You said that there was something about the form, or the format of a screenplay that you just felt like you could tackle, that there's a lot of white space. It's mostly dialogue, but you still had to go from the opening scene of the movie to the ending credits. I mean, you still had to make it through a story through three act structure or whatever structure you're working within. Even though you felt like you couldn't finish a novel, you still told the story. Do you ever look back at that and say, well, I could do it. I just, you know, for whatever reason, I just felt like I couldn't do it. That I think a lot of, and I'd say because a lot of people, I think, struggle with, you know, a 400 page novel or, you know, whatever is a daunting task, but it's still just telling a story.
Yeah, I think taking those screenwriting classes and learning how to write a screenplay really helped me when I came back to novels, because it's a lot more structured. You know, when you only have 100 pages to tell a story,
right,
then there's more of a format. You know, there are certain rules. I mean, of course, you can break the rules once you're successful, but in the beginning, you learn what the rules are first. And there's that three act structure and how to kind of what goes in the first act and the second act and the third act and your characters when you're formulating your characters, you know, that they should have an arc and certain things that rules that you learn that you can write. You can always fudge the rules later, but learning those basic things about screenwriting, I could carry over into writing novels. And then having to structure and having to, you always have to outline for a screenplay. You usually have to come up, you know, as part of the job, you usually have to come up with something before you start writing the actual screenplay. So that really helped me to finish a novel because now I knew, you know, what goes into the beginning and the middle and the end.
Do you still think in those terms of like the three act structure and what the setup of a story is and, you know, what the conflict is and then what the resolution? Do you still think, you know, when you're thinking about a new book, are you still thinking in those terms?
Oh yeah. I definitely think more like movie terms. You know, I definitely have that in the back of my mind as I'm writing, but I do feel like writing novels is more liberating. It's a little more free. So you can go, as I do in my books, I have three different POVs and spending a lot of time with those POVs, which you wouldn't necessarily do in a movie. You probably more in a, like a series, like a limited series, but in a film, you wouldn't have time to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Another thing that you mentioned is that when you took on the challenge of writing a screenplay, it felt like everyone in LA was writing a screenplay. And, you know, this is another common hurdle for a lot of people who want to break into either novel writing or screenwriting is that everyone else is doing it. How do you rise above the vast sea of everyone else doing it? How did you find a way to stand out in the crowd?
Yeah, that is the hard part of the business, both for screenwriting and book writing. I would say for screenwriting, it's definitely hard, even if you write a good screenplay, to get it even produced, because it costs so much money and it takes so much crew. And, you know, to get greenlit, you have to just be lucky at the right place at the right time, which I think I was for my movie. But I always tell people that, agents and reps are afraid to take chances. Everybody in Hollywood is afraid to take chances. So you have to prove yourself somehow. And for me, that was entering contests. And that was kind of, you know, getting some validation there. And I know a lot of people who just go ahead and make a little film, like they'll, you know, have a short film or something just to get noticed and enter them in festivals, things like that. Books, I feel like it's easier to get a finished product, you know, because it doesn't take quite as much money, and you can always sell.
You don't need $100 million investment to get a book launched. normally.
Exactly. But then you have to compete once it's in book form with the 2 million other books that are coming out that year. And how do you get noticed? And that is, I don't really know the answer to that question.
No, I think that's the challenge that we're all still trying to crack to this day.
Exactly.
It's so wild. So you always felt like that, even though you were screenwriting and you had seen some success there, it was always a dream to write that novel. Did you have an idea for a novel that you said, one day I'm going to write this idea? Or was it just the idea of writing a novel and, you know, you would tackle the idea when you got there?
I think I just wanted to write a novel. But initially, when I first was taking classes in novel writing, I had the idea that I was going to write my mother's story when she was living in Japan and she was a kid, and how World War II affected her living in Japan as a kid, and, you know, what her life was like, which I was just floored by, because, you know, you don't think your parents, you know, you don't really appreciate your parents until you're much older. And then you hear their stories and what they went through and you're like, holy crap, you know. So that was in the back of my mind. But I ended up not writing that story and getting diverted to all these different other stories. And I still haven't written that story.
There's still time. There's still time. Yeah. But yeah. Iris, one more question about screenwriting and how it kind of contrast or maybe is complementary to novel writing, is that I've known quite a few people that have been involved in the film industry, either as directors or as actors or as writers, who have then gone on to write novels and a lot of times seem to be happier in the literary world. And maybe, you know, one guess that I have is that the act of making a movie is very much a collaborative effort. There's one person who maybe writes a screenplay, and then maybe other people will write revisions or add to or take away or, you know, whatever. And then you get to, you know, a host of producers, and then you have a director, and then you cast all these actors, and they then embody the characters, and everyone has their little piece that they, you know, play in to bring this thing about. Whereas a novel, one person, one mind, Iris Yamashita is in control of all of that, you know, until, you know, 75% or 80% of the process is done. And then you get, you know, an editor will come in, and then you've got all the people that are involved in publishing, and then the booksellers, and, you know, then it becomes a bit of a collaborative process. But for the vast majority, it's just you and these characters that live in your head. And so do you think that plays into why it's maybe more fulfilling to write a novel? Maybe that's not the right terminology. Please correct me if I'm getting this wrong. But just as from an outsider's view, that's what it appears to me.
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that's exactly it. Film is very collaborative, and there's a lot of people involved who all are putting their input in and their visions in. And usually the writer is unless you're like Christopher Nolan, you're not working on something completely original. So you're usually a writer for hire. So somebody already has IP, intellectual property, like a book, or they have a news article or a true story or something. They have an idea, and then they're going to hire a writer to actually write it. And the vision might be, you know, not the writer's either. It's like the producer's vision or the director's vision or somebody else's vision. So most of the time, yeah, you're not doing something completely original. And in that sense, yeah, the book, the book world to me is, it's more, liberating. It's more fulfilling because, Yeah, it's your vision. As the author, you're also the director and the casting director and the set designer and all of that. And it's your vision. It's your story. Number one, your story. And that's not easy to do in Hollywood, to write your story that you want to tell.
You said your book Village in the Dark is a sequel to your first book, City Under One Roof. What was the initial idea for City Under One Roof? And I'll kind of explain where I'm coming from with this question. I absolutely am intrigued with the moment of creation where, you know, in one moment that this book doesn't exist in any form or fashion, it just doesn't. But then maybe a character walks onto the stage of your mind, or you know, have seen a news article or something, and it kind of starts the what if game playing in your mind. And then, you know, whatever it is, this thing, the spark happens, and then the book does exist. But it's your job as the author to kind of dig it out of the ground and excavate it and dust it off and polish it and rework it until we're holding a book in our hands. But what was that first moment of creation like for you?
I think it first began over 20 years ago when I was watching a documentary about the real city of Whittier, Alaska, which is the inspiration for my fictional city, which I call Point Menier in the first book. And the first book is called City Under One Roof because all the citizens of that city live in a single high-rise building. And it was built as a military base, I believe. And the only way to get there, because it was a military base, it had to be secretive. So the only way to get there by land was through a tunnel in the mountain. And it was by train back then when I had seen this documentary. They have since opened it. I think in 2000, they opened it to car traffic. So they there's a single lane road through the or tunnel through the mountain, and it switches directions every so often, like 30 minutes or so. And that setting was just so unique and amazing. And, you know, and in the high rise building, you have the store, you have the police station, you have, you have everything there. I think when I watched the documentary, they even had like a tanning salon in there, but I don't think it's not there now. But it was very intriguing, and I didn't have a story back then. And I was just much later, I started thinking about, I think I want to write a mystery. And that that place really stuck with me. And when you go to visit the place and you go through that tunnel, and it's a long tunnel, it's like 2.5 miles. And I just felt like, I feel like I'm dropping down a physical rabbit hole that's going to land me in Wonderland. It's going to be full of weird and wacky people. It's going to be a weird place full of weird and wacky people. And that's that was my kind of jumping off point for creating characters that I thought would fit in this weird kind of Alaskan wonderland.
I love it. So were you, when you started writing that novel, had you, tasked yourself, okay, I'm going to write this novel now? Or did you just have this idea and just kind of start exploring it? And then you realized, this is going to be a novel.
Yeah, I had originally thought of it as a series for streaming. Okay. And so then you have to come up with a season, and then also think about, could there be a season two? So I had already started outlining this. And I was thinking, I think I have enough material here for a book, and I was writing it kind of on the side. I wasn't serious about it. And I was serious about one day finishing, but I didn't have a deadline. So it took me quite a while. And then when we when we sold it, the idea, then I had a deadline, and then I was serious about, okay, now I've got to really finish this, and I have a schedule, and I have to do this, you know, and that's how it was for the second book. I had, less than a year, I think, for the second book to be written. But the first book I took, because I was writing it on the side, I think I took about 4 years to write it.
As dreaded deadlines. They've been
I like the deadline because then that really, that lights the fire under your to actually finish it. I think I work better when there are hard deadlines. Yeah.
For sure. For sure. Boundaries are a blessing, I think my grandmother used to say. But in a screenplay, you're dealing with mostly dialogue, it seems, and some setting and some kind of sparse description. But it seems like the director's vision and maybe the actors really kind of flesh out the things that are only alluded to on the page in a lot of ways. But in a novel, you have all the room in the world to just really flesh out setting and character details, and really to add character to these characters and to these places. Was that something that you found difficult, or did you, you know, kind of fall into it? Like, you know, this is what I've always wanted to do, but never had the room to do it.
Yeah, I think because I, you know, had that love before early on, I actually really enjoy the descriptions actually more than I enjoy writing dialogue.
Nice.
And I don't, I don't think I particularly write good dialogue, which is odd coming from the screenwriting world. But I do, I actually do enjoy the description part. But the one thing that did kind of rub off on me when I was writing screenplays was that I wouldn't describe the characters, because, you know, you have casting, and right. I didn't want to have their physical features. You know, in screenplays, you don't want to have so much physical features, because in casting, you don't know who's going to get cast. I don't even sometimes know whether I should be specific about ethnicity, because I want, if I want it to be open.
Sure.
So when it came to the first book, and I had finished the draft to give to the editor, and then they were coming up with ideas for the book cover, and the artist asked, well, what does the protagonist look like? I realized I had never written cover through my entire draft. And I thought, that's not good. And I had to go back and actually write a description of the protagonist, because that was something. Yeah, that was something I don't usually think of in screenwriting. So, yeah.
That's so funny. That's so funny. Tell me about Detective Kara Kennedy. Where did she come from?
I just had... It's difficult to write protagonists who are in my world, because, you know, I had come up with this wacky sort of Wonderland world, and so a lot of the characters have kind of quirks or are unusual. And then your protagonist, though, is, I always think of the protagonist as that's the audience's eyes, and so you don't want to make them too strange, but you still want to have them have a story and a backstory, right, and what's motivating them and what's driving them. And so she was actually kind of difficult to mold, but once I realized that you know, she was driven by what happened to her husband and her son, who got lost, supposedly got lost in a hiking accident and died that way. That's what's kind of made her have sort of these mental issues, or these things that have put her on disability from her work. And so, you know, you always like to have the unreliable narrator sometimes. So she kind of, in the first book, it's kind of like that. And in the second book, when it starts, she gets a clue that maybe there was foul play involved. in the death of her husband and son. And so it starts out with her having the bodies exhumed from their graves, which is, you know, very painful for right. her, because it's her husband and her son. And finding out what happened to them is what drives her in this village in the dark in the second book.
You mentioned that when you started writing the first book, you started thinking about, is there series potential, or at least, potential for a follow-up for this. Was this the idea that you came up with then, or did the idea for this second book come in the writing of the first book, or how did you kind of see how her story would continue?
That story was existed from the time I was writing the first book, but how it was going to end, I didn't know yet.
Gotcha. It sounds like that you're a pretty dedicated outliner. Do you always have the ending nailed from the beginning of the writing, or, you know, do you kind of allow it to percolate in there and, you know, maybe your subconscious come up with a different ending in the writing?
I usually have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And the end is kind of in vague terms. Like, I know, you know, that it's going, you know, it's going to be solved. The mystery is going to be solved in the end. Otherwise, the reader will be very upset. But there's certain details, like, you know, there's certain details that I didn't know until the middle of writing it. Like, how exactly was it going to end? I had a general idea of how it's going to end, but the little details I didn't have. And so that, that comes when you're writing it.
Yeah. You have a very strong, well-realized main protagonist in Detective Kara. But how do you think about your tertiary characters, your the other people that live in the world of your book that make the story more rich, and how do you think about creating those characters?
Well, there's that advice that, you know, we mentioned in the beginning about having characters that are distinct enough so that when you read their dialogue, you know that they're different. So that was one part of it. And the other part, as I had mentioned earlier, about being inspired sort of by the Alice in Wonderland of it all. So there are certain Easter eggs, you know, some references that I have to characters in Alice in Wonderland in the first book. And in the second book, I was inspired by Alice through the Looking Glass. So there are certain things that I pull from these books. But I mean, it's not necessary to know what the Easter eggs are or anything like that. But they help to formulate ideas. And then
I'm going to have to go back and reread the book now. Look what you've done.
It's a fun thing to do. It definitely is a fun thing to do. If you need character ideas, sometimes you can pull from, you know, other books, inspired by other books. But not all of it is like that. Some things, like, there's a character that appears in both book one and book two, and she's kind of a crazy, she's the lounge singer. And she's like an over 50s Asian woman who wears over sexified outfits, and she wears a Barbarella wig, and, you know, she's just kind of crazy out there. I forgot what I was looking for, but I was surfing YouTube for some like old jazz tunes or something like that, and she just popped up on YouTube, and I thought, oh, she's an amazing character. I have to use her. And of course I modified, I pulled from other characters to create the Mariko character that's in book one and book two.
I love that so much. That is amazing. Are we going to see Kara Kennedy pop up in any other stories?
That's a good question. I'm not going to say I'm not going to continue this series, because there's always, you know, possibilities and ideas for this world. But my idea for my next book right now is not in the Kara Kennedy series.
Okay.
But it's only an outline at the moment, so who knows?
Gotcha. Well, I can't wait to see with what you come up with next. Village in the Dark, as you see sitting on my shelf behind me, is out everywhere today. Today is release day, or if you're hearing this on our podcast channel, it's been out for a couple of days now. Go visit your local bookstore, support local books, pick up your copy of it. If you don't have a great local bookstore near you, we'll put links to it, or you can pick it up from Amazon, either in Kindle edition or in hardcover or the Audible edition. I have not listened to the Audible yet. Iris, have you gotten a chance to hear any of it?
You know, I haven't listened to it yet. I just got it this morning. And yeah. But I had samples of the voice actors. And this is what's great about listening, because I've heard so many of my friends say they love the audiobook, the first one, because there's three voices. Yeah. And they were excellent actors. And this bunch, too, that I got to listen to, they're great actors. Three wonderful women, you know, reading. It's great, because you have, when you have great actors and you have different voices, it's easy to listen to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Village in the Dark, available everywhere now. Iris, if people are just discovering you and want to dig into all the great stuff that you're up to, is there a place online where they can find out all about you and follow along for news?
Yes, I have a website. It's my name, irisyamashita.com. And I have links on the website to my social media, like Instagram and Facebook. So you can find me there.
Excellent. We'll link those up as well to make it easy to find you. Iris Yamashita, Village in the Dark is the new novel. Thank you so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you.
That's our episode for today. There's so much more to come as we talk to authors about the craft of writing, but also the business of publishing. Be sure to subscribe to the Storycraft Cafe podcast in your favorite podcast app so that you never miss an episode. The Storycraft Cafe is made possible by Dabble. Writing a book is challenging. Your writing tool should not be. Dabble is an easy-to-use online writing tool packed with helpful features that allow beginning novelists and published authors to create amazing stories. Visit us at dabblewriter.com and start your free trial today. Thanks for listening.